Chapter 3. Osiris Graveyard.
"Hurry it up," called Jake over the earpiece. "Two more and we're done for the day."
He waved Callie toward the next open lot in the Osiris Cemetery. She pulled herself away from staring at the landscape and gave the shift boss a hasty wave from the back of the gravedigger. Her elbow bumped the side of the cab as she brought her arm down, and the sound echoed inside her suit. She'd adapted quickly to moving in a spacesuit. Most of her mistakes now were only about the added bulk. She'd never had to consider bulk before. She leaned forward so she could see the dashboard through her visor. The machine had deceptively simple controls. She raised the blades, unlocked the wheels, and drove forward. The gravedigger looked like a ready-to-pounce giant insect on huge roller skates. Its six scaffold and piston legs stretched almost 3 meters above the moon's surface, and the resin tanks at the back could be swollen egg pouches. She moved it into position, locked the wheels, and pulled back the twin levers. The machine drove its four blades down into the regolith. It shook as the steel edges sank 1, 1.5, 2 meters down. She twisted a knob, and the blades pivoted, wrapping beneath the block of lunar dirt they'd sectioned.
"Come on, come on,"
Jake's voice echoed in her ear. She could hear the smile on the edge of his words.
"Thought you were qualified on that thing."
"More qualified than you," Callie called back.
"My grandmother could go faster, and we cremated her."
The pistons shuddered, the gravedigger trembled, and a 2-meter-tall block of moon was lifted out of the ground. She pulled back on the yoke, and the machine trundled back out of the way. She stole a moment to look across the moon again. Osiris Base was 150 kilometers from the city, and the cemetery itself spread a good 30 kilometers from the base. It gave the area a sense of desolate grandeur and beauty. Just row after row of tombstones, as far as she could see, with the darkened earth looming in the sky above. In front of the gravedigger, Jake Yazzie carried the coffin bag over with slow, deliberate steps. The spacesuit hid his long, dark hair but added another foot to his already impressive height. He twisted the air cartridge on the bag, and it inflated, taking on the traditional shape in his arms.
"Cynthia Danzig,"
he read off the tag. Across from him, their third, Daniel, dipped his helmet in acknowledgement.
"Services?"
"None."
"Marker?"
"Nope."
"Logged," said Daniel. The two men lowered the coffin into the hole and let go. It drifted down and settled at the bottom of the grave. Callie guided the big machine forward again, and the pistons released their load of regolith and dust back into the hole.
"Easy," said Jake's voice in her ear. "Remember, ease back on the levers."
"Sorry."
"Don't want to crush the body under an avalanche. You want to bury it. Ease the lever back, and you'll feel it when the blades start to release."
"Right. Sorry."
"Don't let him give you crap," said Daniel. "I've never seen anyone drive a gravedigger this well after just 3 weeks. Screw the rotation. You should stay up here."
"We'll see," she said. "I don't want to plan anything that far ahead."
"That's what I told everyone 6 years ago," said Jake.
He bounced back to the hearse crawler and slid out another rack.
"Last client for the day."
Callie guided the gravedigger until it stood poised over the next lot. She pushed the lever forward, and her seat shook again as the blades sank back into the ground. Jake examined the tag.
"Got a marker on this one. Richard King, loving husband and father."
Daniel's gloved fingers tapped out the words on an oversized keyboard mounted near the gravedigger's resin tanks.
"Got a date?"
2171 to 2243.
"Got it."
He tapped in the last digit just as the machine rolled away with its block of lunar dirt. The two caretakers lowered the body into the hole. Callie guided the gravedigger forward, and the lunar dirt and rocks streamed in to fill the grave. A blue light flashed three times on the dash, and on the edge of her visor she saw a matching flash below. A tray dropped down holding the finished slab. Each resin tombstone was half a meter square. Blue and gray veins ran through the faux marble. She'd made a lot of them over the past 3 weeks, seen even more. Daniel pulled the slab loose from the machine. The gravedigger rolled out of the way, and he pressed the marker into the fresh grave. He murmured a few words the microphones didn't quite pick up, then crossed himself. He made the gesture look graceful and effortless, even in a bulky spacesuit. Callie cleared her throat.
"Thought they didn't pay for services."
"Just a courtesy," said Daniel, turning to look up at her. "They cared enough to have a marker put down, and the collar doesn't mean much if I only use it when someone pays." He tapped the ridge where his helmet locked onto the suit. Jake pounded on the side of the gravedigger.
"Open the recharge panels and shut down," he told Callie. "We're done for the day."
Her fingers ran across the dashboard, locking the wheels and blades.
"Are we in a rush?"
"It's movie night," said Daniel.
"Movie night?"
"Time-honored tradition," Jake explained as he pushed Rax back into the hearse. "Once a month we get together to watch and critique bad films, with drinks."
"Isn't that what you do every weekend?"
"No," said Jake. "That's when we watch good movies."
"We could go easy on her," suggested Daniel. "After all, she hasn't even been here a month."
Jake grunted and waved a dismissive hand. Callie hopped from the gravedigger's platform and landed with a faint puff of dust. Landed on the moon. The actual surface of the moon. The feel of standing there still gave her a thrill. She'd never expected to feel that kind of joy again. Daniel cleared his throat.
"I'm sure no one would mind if we put it off for a week or three, even till next month."
Callie walked over to him. Walked across the moon.
"I'm still not sure I understand."
"Movie night is when Jake subjects us all to his collection of awful 21st century movies,"
Daniel smiled inside his helmet.
"We let him do it because he buys snacks."
"Amazing how much leverage a good chocolate chip cookie gets you up here," said Jake. "Want to ride in the buggy or the hearse?"
"I'll go with you in the buggy," she said. "I need the practice getting in and out."
Daniel waved to them as he climbed up into the hearse crawler's cab. Callie bounded over to join Jake at the buggy. Hathor looked like a huge white bullet, just over 8 meters long, sitting up on six large wheels of segmented metal. One of the other Osiris caretakers, old Henri, had described the buggies as space RVs, but Callie hadn't been quite sure what that meant. A wide platform, the porch, made up the back 2 meters, where a pair of empty spacesuits hung, separated by rectangular ports. She climbed the steep steps up onto the platform. Jake helped her line up her suits pack with the bracket for one of the ports.
"Just look at the platform," he reminded her,
waving a thick arm down at the aluminum mesh.
"Get yourself between the lines and you're good."
She took a step back. She heard and felt her backpack settle into the bracket. A clack echoed through the suit, and her ears popped.
"Ready?"
Callie nodded. He guided her arm back and set it on the red lever by her hip. She nodded again and yanked it up. There was a loud hiss. Cool air rushed over her back. She dropped her chin to her chest and let herself tip back out of the suit, through the open port, and into the buggy's tiny airlock. There was a bar just above the opening, and she used it to drag herself the rest of the way out of the spacesuit.
A moment after her feet touched the deck, the port next to her opened and Jake crawled out.
"Made it without any help this time," he said. "Good job."
He stretched and ran his hands across his black mass of hair, pressing it down against his scalp. He had the longest hair of any caretaker Callie had met, except for her own. It almost brushed his broad shoulders. She shook herself and tried to adjust the jumpsuit back to its somewhat comfortable position on her body. It had been itching her for over an hour.
"I still don't know how you can do your own suit. I'd be scared I'd miss the bracket or something."
"Just a confidence thing," he said. "Takes a couple of months. Suit won't open if it's not in the bracket. Port won't open if there's not a suit there."
"Yeah, I know," Callie said as they entered the buggy's main cabin.
There were two long couches that could double as beds and a half dozen equipment lockers. As in most open spaces she'd encountered on the moon, plants hung in each corner for air quality.
"It's just a lot different when you're actually in a hard vacuum on the moon instead of a gym, you know?"
"Hell yeah," Jake said. "Suit only weighs 25 kilos up here."
He grabbed a dark blue baseball cap from the front driver's seat and pulled it on as he settled into the chair. His slender fingers skipped over the comm panel, routing it through his earpiece.
"You ready to go, Daniel?"
"Just waiting on you two."
The hearse pulled up alongside and he gave them a wave. Callie waved back from the passenger seat. Jake tapped in a new channel.
"Osiris Base, this is Hathor. We have 67 clients in the ground and logged, heading home."
The deep voice of Waqid, the base's head caretaker, echoed over the buggy's speakers.
"About time. Everyone else was done half an hour ago."
"They weren't saddled with a rookie," Jake said. He winked at Callie.
"Ismay and Henri had Tessa with them. They were the first done."
"Tessa makes all of us look like rookies," Jake said. "I think she's a robot. This corpse using her to keep an eye on us."
There was a crackle of static as Waqid laughed.
"Sure, keep making excuses. Get your useless selves back here. I'm making pasta if anyone wants some."
"Copy that. Hathor out."
The buggy's motors hummed to life and it rolled down the trail to Osiris, picking up speed as it went. The acceleration was just high enough for Callie to feel it. With each faint shudder, she imagined the wheels flexing over and around the random stones. Jake lifted his chin.
"Hathi, give us a little traveling music."
"Of course, Jake,"
the buggy's AI replied.
"Do you have any preferences?"
He glanced at Callie for possible objections. He hadn't made a music selection yet that she didn't like, so she just shrugged.
"You know what I like."
He settled back into the seat.
"Okay, Jake."
Soft, wordless music filled Hathor. Something with lots of strings. It sounded vaguely familiar to Callie's ears. Probably the score from one of Jake's good movies. One of his hands stayed on the throttle while the other tapped in time with the music. The other reason Callie liked traveling with Jake, he didn't ask questions. He almost never started casual conversations. They'd been driving for 10 minutes when, out of the corner of her eye, something flashed. She looked out the side window and saw clouds of dust trembling just above the ground.
"What the hell was that?"
Jake shut the music off with a swipe of his hand.
"Meteor. Big one, too."
He tapped the console.
"You see that, Daniel?"
"Yep. Out by Frigoris."
"That's what I thought, too. If something big hit part of Hades, they're going to be pissed."
"Better call it in."
Callie glanced out at the golden, shimmering sky again.
"So what do we do?"
"We call it in, we go home," said Jake.
"It's movie night."
"That's it?"
His fingers danced on the console again.
"Hey, Waqid, you catch that?"
"Yeah, tripped a couple of sensors. I was just going to give you a call. Meteor?"
"Look like one. We think it might have hit out by Hades."
"I'll give Christine a call over there. What's your ETA?"
"About an hour.
See you then."
Jake tapped the comm silent. Another pass with his hand brought the music up again, and he leaned back into the driver's seat.
"You all seem really calm about this," Callie said.
"What, the meteor?"
"Yeah."
"Nothing special," Jake said with a shrug. "Moon's a big place. Gets hit 100 times a day. 2/3 of them are smaller than my thumbnail, but there's no atmosphere to burn them up. Maybe every 4 or 5 months a graveyard gets hit by something you'd actually notice."
"And that's not a big deal?"
"Most of the time it's nothing. Something the size of a baseball hits, musses up a grave or two, that's it. Been doing this just over 6 years, and I've seen 3 tombstones get cracked." He reached up and tugged the brim of his cap. "Worst one was 60 years ago. Lazarus got hit in 82. Iron meteorite. Weighed in at 730 kilos earthside. Made a crater 60 meters across. Unearthed over 300 bodies. Just threw them everywhere. They had to hire extra crew, and it still took over 3 months to sort it all out and repair all the damage."
"This one felt like a big hit," Callie said.
Jake shook his head. "Different tectonics up here. You'll get used to it."
"I just can't believe you're all acting so blasé about it."
"One universal truth I've learned in my life," he gestured out at the lunar landscape lit by harsh sunlight. The dust had settled, and the distant shimmer in the sky had dispersed. "Everywhere gets boring eventually."
55 minutes later, as Hathor docked at Osiris Base, Wagid's voice came back over the speakers.
"Christine's going crazy. They lost 6 cameras out at the southern edge of Hades, right at Lacus Mortis. Satellite shows a dust cloud almost 2 kilometers across. If sensors are right, the impact may have taken out 600 to 700 graves.
"Wow,"
murmured Callie. "No shit," said Jake. "It didn't seem that bad."
"Yeah, that's what we all thought, too. Still might just be a dust ball, but the more they looked, the more damage it seems to have caused. She's sending a team out in the morning to look. Get in here. We're all looking at the images."
The comm channel closed out with a quick beep.
"Lacus Mortis," said Callie as the buggy's side hatch slid open. They stepped out into the chilly docking hall that led into Osiris Base.
She ran through lunar maps in her head and tried to remember all the names and locations from her classes.
"That's on the edge of Frigoris, right?"
"Yep," he said. "It came down at the Lake of Death."
"Guess it was something to worry about after all," Callie said.
"Yeah, I doubt it. You'll see. Couple of days, we'll all be laughing about how much we overreacted to this."